It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. This is Dr. Joe Salustio here, actually recording from the Eleusian Live conference in Denver, Colorado. I've got people all around me. I've got a guest on Zoom right now recording. I've got my co-founder, Elvin Freitas, sitting right next to me drinking a mango juice right next to the equipment. And all I can say is this.
Hold on tight. This is going to be a bumpy ride.
We're going to figure it out one way or another. I will tell you, the weather is beautiful. We're at the Denver Convention. We're at the Colorado Convention Center. It's just a lot going on. And one thing that continues to go on is our president series here at the EdUp Experience, where we continue to bring on the most innovative and amazing and awesome folks across higher ed in a position as president. I've got one with me here today, and I got to make sure I bring him in the right way. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Dr. Drew Van Horn. He is president of Young Harris College. Drew, what's happening? How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you are. Sounds like you've got a great environment to be doing this.
Well, yeah, it's kind of fun. I'll tell you, you know, when you come to an event like this and everybody sees these microphones, they look and they go, what's going on over there? And so it's like sharks going around a piece of meat, and then, you know, nobody sits down. We got to get that first person to sit down, and then there's a line. That's what happens. To get the insights of people, right? This is, we'd like to keep it fun here at the EdUp Experience. We want to know all about Young Harris College. So level set for us. What do you guys do, and how do you do it?
Absolutely. We are a private institution in the North Georgia Mountains, founded in 1886. The whole purpose of the institution was to bring education to the people of Appalachia. And the things that we do that are probably not as unique as some people may think, but we're situated in a valley surrounded completely by mountains. The largest mountain in Georgia is back up to our campus. We really spend a lot of time on the personal side with our students. It's about them. To really kind of say what this institution has been, it's what's next. We've always brought students in, and from day one, we say, what's next for you? What's next in your life? And that really helps us to get to know the student, but also help them shape their destiny as far as what they want to accomplish. We start that from day one.
So what are today's students telling you that they want? And let me ask that and give you a couple layers of that question. Do students want the same things that they wanted 2 years ago, pre-pandemic? Are those needs and desires changed because of the pandemic or because of education's, the question of and value of higher ed?
Well, good question. I think that what we're hearing from our students have been impacted by COVID. A lot of it is that they spent a year and a half online in high school, and now they're coming back to a campus and the rigor of the classroom. So what we're hearing from them is, I might need a little bit of help. That's something that we hear from them, and we have
because
to respond.
Is it because they're because the lost years in high school, there wasn't enough preparation for college. And now you're getting to college and you did a year remote or maybe even 2 years remote.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, wait a second. I'm going to go somewhere now and I'm going to get smacked in the face with real work again. Not that to say that they didn't do that in high school, but the mental challenge of being a part of it again, right?
That's correct. It's the whole concept of being back in a classroom. And we've seen growth simply because students don't want to go to a big university now. The kids that come to us, they want to have a small classroom where they can be in. And if they feel like they need to social distance, they can do that. But yes, what we do hear from them is, I haven't been in a classroom in a year and a half. And I've never been to college, so please, you know, help me get my feet under me. And that's what we have done real well throughout our history as an institution. So we hear that. And the second thing we hear does come back to the aspect of what's going to be for me after I graduate. How can you help me be prepared to get into the workforce? And so our balance is along the lines of looking at a student and saying, okay, let's talk about your major. What do you want to do, and what all can you do with that major? And we do that from day one. And then so we prepare them for that. And then we try to show them that it's not about a job, that their life is going to be a journey. And we want them to be nimble enough to change occupations, change careers if they need to be.
Level up.
Right, it's about leveling up. And you know, one of the things that keeps coming up, and you're a private liberal. Let me try that again. See,
Okay.
I'm off my game. I'm gonna get another coffee. A private liberal arts institution, and you know as well as I do, and I've talked to so many presidents about this. Like the liberal arts, it's not directional enough. It's not, you know, it doesn't say, you know, you will get a job. It's a general type of education. And so people are saying now in the workforce with, you know, your skills to job marketplaces, something liberal arts just doesn't have as much value. And then I get, you know, some people on here that just give amazing answers to this value question of, you know, it's not just short-term value. It's not just the job you get out of college. It's this lifelong mindset that you know, so what do you tell, are kids coming in just going, what am I going to do with this degree? And do you have to justify it at all, or is it understood now?
No, yeah, I think you have to justify it to the parents as well as to the students. That's why we start from the day one with the freshmen. We ask them, what is it you want to major in? And the first question and first assignment they have is go research three careers you can have with that and what are the starting salaries. And so we do that in for the aspect of them realizing that the value of what we're trying to do is a lifelong value. Our mission statement basically says that what we want to do is to have students to define for themselves what success looks like in their lives, what success and meaning look like in their lives. That's we want them to define that, and it's an ongoing definition. And so that's why we try to prepare them with the liberal arts, is let them know that it can be adjusted. We tell our faculty, if you're in a class, I want you to approach it as if a student says, tell me how this course is going to help me in my life. And you've got to be able to answer that question for the students, today's students, for them to really get engaged with the material.
100%.
Crowd agrees. What's interesting about what you just said too, and I like it a lot, is almost even by a class by class basis, a faculty by faculty basis, you have to understand and be able to communicate the value proposition of individual classes and individual skills that you're gaining within those classes. It almost brings another level of, I mean, I don't want to say it's even justifying, but it's understanding the value and being able to communicate it and the responsibility that we have in higher ed at the highest level and at the level of delivering the education, that we have to understand that the student consumer, the student, is really transient and then just go from institution to institution. And if we don't show what the value is and they don't see that value, those snap decisions are really quick, right? People just move from institutions, they transfer like nothing. I remember I transferred. I'd tell a quick story. I went to a SUNY school in New York, and I did a year at a SUNY school, and I had a really terrible experience. I thought about pledging a fraternity. That didn't work out well because I was falling asleep in a midterm. And then I transferred to another SUNY school. But it was, you know, hard. It was a hard decision to make, and I was worried about transfer credit, and it was just a very hard thing. But now I talk to kids and they're like, oh no, I'm transferring. This school's made it actually a lot easier. I'm just going to go. Is that a worry for you, you know, at top level, that you just, you know, create an infrastructure of understanding across all levels?
Yes, it is important for us. We don't necessarily worry a lot about transferring. We do a lot of communication with our students. When they say they're wanting to transfer, we intervene and really find out, okay, give us the reasons why. If it's cost, yes, we can understand that, and we can help you make sure your grades can get transferred and it's acceptable. But we try to find out the real reason. We're all about questions here. And that's what we ask the students, tell us why you're doing that. And for us, what we're learning is that today's students, the mental health is something that really I haven't seen in my 36 years in college. They're coming in with such baggage and so many things that they're even afraid to unpack. We say here, kids bring their physical baggage with them when they move into the dorm room, but they've got emotional baggage and educational baggage. And we have the environment where we want to be free to unpack it and wrestle with those things. But right now, the students today that we're seeing, they're just so sensitive, and it doesn't take very much for them to be pushed over an edge. And in education, that really is something that we have to fight for. Show the kids that they do have worth, that they do need to have resilience, that they do need to be able to bounce back. And that's a benefit of going through higher education. It's all about resilience.
How do you do that? Okay, you're president. What you said, it's resonating with a lot of people, the mental health services. There's just another level that needs to be provided. How do you plan for that? You're sitting in your office. I'm sure you have a great leadership team. Right. How do you plan for it? How do you, it's a part of retention, but I understand when student can't afford, when they say, I can't afford something, I get that. Most right. people understand that. But when a student says, hey, look, I'm really struggling, I think I'm going to go over the edge here, or it's too much for me. We're not psychologists or we're not psychotherapists in higher ed, but it's almost like we have to play that role. How do you bridge that gap between higher ed administration and psychotherapy for students?
Sure. I mean, you have
a hard thing.
It is. You have to, what we have to do is it's a multi-team, multi-level situation for us. We train our RAs, for example, they come in early. We train them on early warning signs. We train them on behaviors to be looking for. So we've got them at that level. We train our faculty. Our faculty know we're small enough that we know when a student's not in class, and the faculty member contacts the student or contacts our team that involves our counselors and things of that nature. And so it's multifaceted. The days of us just having one counselor and, hey, kid, you're in trouble, go see Dr. So-and-so. No, we've got to have coaches, RAs, faculty members, staff members, administrators, with our eyes wide open to be able to look for those issues. So that's how we adapted to it. We gave them 24/7 coverage via telehealth type situations. But more than that, we're small and we've got to be able to be personal with these kids, and that's a benefit for us. The problem is they don't really tell you that they're hurting. And
that's one of the things that's coming up more often now. You're hearing is that that we know kids are more in trouble mentally than they ever have been, but they're also not communicating it.
That's right. It's you can understand it from a certain perspective. My degrees are in counseling and in leadership development.
See, I knew there was something there in counseling. Yeah. I knew you had something behind you.
Had something there, but the issue is that if you've been online for a year and a half and you don't have access to your guidance counselor and you don't have access to talk to that teacher offline, and you don't want to tell mom and dad what you're struggling with, that you do that for a year and a half, it's hard to break through that to be able to be open. So for us, that's where we come into the whole aspect of asking kids the questions. Our first year experience, the first question that they get at every session is, how's the week been? How are you doing?
Amazing.
And it's a small group of 5 to 7 kids. And they know each other, and the faculty who lead teach that have been trained to look for those signs, and they may pull Drew off to the side and say, hey, talk to me a little bit. What's going on here? So I think that's about the best that we can do, and kids still fall through the cracks.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges, right?
It is.
Follow through the, see, I hit my own volume button. I was way down on volume. It's this is how good I am, right? I turn my volume off, hit the wrong buttons. Talk to me a little bit about enrollment, right? Enrollment cliff, maybe enrollment cliff, no enrollment cliff, planning for an enrollment cliff, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Online enrollment, on-ground enrollment. Liberal arts institutions are going to evaporate off the face of the earth because the enrollment, they're in trouble. How are you flexing?
Sure.
And what's the elasticity like of your enrollment? How are you guys doing in general?
We're doing okay. The school hit a high mark before I came in as president, and then it started dropping. We've leveled that out and started increasing enrollment again. Part of the way you prepare for that, do I think small privates are in jeopardy? Yes, they can be. I think it's got to be about how they're going to lead and what their position is going to be and how they prepare for it. For us, we use, and I've always used the Bayesian model of planning. And Bay was a mathematician, and he was really the basis of how people did strategic planning before the 50s came and we started doing SWOT analysis. And what he did was very nimble. He said, you have enough information as you look at situations and you have a gut feeling. What you need to do is act on that gut feeling, keep assessing, and you get less wrong over time. So you've got to be nimble enough that you are willing to change. We started, for example, we had a program in economics. Well, kids don't really value and understand the whole concept of economics. But then when we shifted it,
you start making money anyway.
That's right. But we shifted it to business analytics. And when we just changed the title, kids started coming in because they realized now, okay, economics is about analysis. It's about understanding what's going on. So we're trying to be nimble where we can make changes quickly. And I think that's what small colleges have to do. And then the second thing is partnerships. I can't do everything. So we started a partnership with our flagship institution in the state on engineering. Kids come to us for 3 years, major in mathematics, and they take 2 engineering classes, and then they can transfer to the flagship institution in the School of Engineering. Now that helps because in 3 years, our kids have gotten some success. They've had some encouragement. They've aged, and while they may not have been able to survive at that flagship institution as a freshman, they can go in as a junior and finish up and have a lot of confidence behind them. Those type of partnerships are going to be important for small privates to develop and not be everything to everybody.
I love what you said about naming programs. This is a big thing for me because I work in marketing a lot, and I'm like, what is academics and faculty are not awesome.
Right.
They're awesome at a lot of things, but they're not awesome about naming a program because they name it exactly what they want it to sound like.
Right.
And nobody on Google is going to search for that. You know, economics is a good, like nobody's doing searching for a bachelor's in economics. Nobody even wants it, right? Economics
That's
is a class that you didn't go to, that you went to take your midterm when you're in college and then you whatever.
Sure.
But business analytics or learn how to make money, you start thinking about how you subtitle these programs and make them attractive for today's students who are looking for the matchup between skill and meaning, right? What does this really mean for me and what can I do with it? That's a really important point that you made, Drew, and I want to just reiterate it for the audience because it's like, that's why the skills marketplace is growing so rapidly is because they say exactly what the person's going to learn. And in higher ed, we haven't figured that out all the way yet. What do you do with that? What do you do with programs and analytics and Google and naming and to attract a student consumer?
Well, you hit it right on the head. You have to be outside of the box as far as your thinking. We just, for example, we're going to be on an episode of Viewpoint with Dennis Quaid. We worked, and it's going to be showing on PBS. It's going to be showing on other markets, and it's highlighting the difference between who we are and our environment. But to go back to your point, we have to market to our students each semester. to get them to come back. And so that's what we're doing when we're going through advising. Our advisors are saying, tell us what we're doing right, tell us what we're not doing wrong, right? And let me answer you a couple of questions. Then when the kids finish their freshman year, if you're not marketing to that freshman to come back that sophomore year. So it's changed the whole dynamic of how higher education needs to market to its clientele, not only the new students, but to its current base. And if we can't do that, you're going to see the retention issues you discussed and talked about, and you're going to lose the value of your institution.
Good point. Good point. Right? Because when you have students leave, they're telling you that they didn't find the value in what you're doing, right? They
That's
vote
right.
with their feet, as you hear this, we say all the time. Talk to me a little bit about educational technology, implementation of technology to help you do things and track things.
Sure.
You know, how is, because, you know, one of the things that there's two questions here, and one of the things I'm noticing amongst colleges and the university presidents is, okay, where are we going next? Right. You know, do we need to add technology now? Or are we entrenching in, you know, we're not going to go forward with technology. We're going to stick with what we have and really entrench back around the consumer again and find out all these intricacies right. before we expand in technology again. There's a really delicate balance there. Talk to me about what your focus is, Young and Harris College.
Well, we are known for face-to-face instruction. That's why the students come to us. So we have good technology, but most of what we use our technology for is in hybrid situations. We will use it in a hybrid aspect where the student may take some things with them through the course of the week electronically, but then they come back maybe during the summer and have a two-week intense time on campus. So we're not going to be one of those online institutions. That's not our mission. It's not who we are. So technology for us is really based on our students. What do our students come in with us? We have 450 first-generation college students here now. 425 of them are Pell students. They don't have computers. They don't have, some of them don't even have cell phones. So technology to them is meaningless because they've never had the opportunity to use it. So for us, we randomly talk to our students each year, and we stay on the cusp of what's happening with technology to see what they want and not tell them. It's the whole old adage of if an architect builds a building and they tell you, don't put the sidewalks in. Let's see where the kids walk and then put the sidewalks in. Too many times colleges put the sidewalks in when it comes to technology and the kids don't even use it. And they're saying, well, why'd we make this big investment when we could have just done it in a much cheaper way, in a more effective way?
That's such a good point.
So that's what we do.
That's such a good point. Yeah, you do wonder that, right? Like we go, oh, wow, if we implement this, our students are going to do X, Y, and Z. You see it a lot with mobile apps. That's why I see it a lot.
Yeah.
We're going to create an app, and the students are going to use it. You put 100K into the app, and then you're like, students, we're going to put signs all over the campus with a QR code, and everyone's going to download the app, and nobody downloads the app, right?
No.
Because they're using whatever they're using already. They're telling you they don't need it or don't want it. It's
right.
a really confusing space to have something click for a student, right? There's a user adoption piece that is really complex.
It is, and it's maturity. I mean, you think about the maturity of what it takes to fully use technology to have a learning environment. That's why you see a lot of adult learners attracted to that, because they have the maturity, they understand that. 18 to 21-year-olds, their technology is Twitter. Their technology is anything that can be quick to them. They would be lost if we put a class online, because they can't engage with their faculty members, they can't have debate with their fellow peers. And that's why our philosophy is that this generation can use some technology, but they're not geared, the kind of kids we serve, they're not geared to be fully online.
Talk to me a little bit about marketing. Mm-hmm. You're in Georgia, and you're in a mountainous region of Georgia. So there's a certain attractiveness you want to bring people to your campus in an area maybe they're not thinking about, or it offers them, I'm a student that maybe you recruit from Atlanta, for an example.
Right.
Totally different way of life to go in the mountains than it would be in an urban jungle.
Right.
How important is the external facing messaging of what you do, and how do you massage it? And what's that value proposition that you champion about your institution and the area and environment that you offer as an educational differentiator?
Well, first thing, that it's like you spend most of your money to get your leads, and your messaging to your leads basically in this generation is about emotion and feel. And so we show them who we are, where we are, and tell them, you know, you can go anywhere from here. And the whole messaging is come see us, because we know that if they step foot on campus, then we can give our value proposition. And for us, the value proposition is one of, yes, you're in a small rural area, but let's talk about what the positives are with that. Real quickly, surrounded by the mountains. So we tell the kids, okay, you're in a valley right now, and for 4 years, you're going to be engaging and rubbing elbows with your professors, learning about yourself and your peers. But while you're doing that, you're going to see these mountains. We all have mountains in our lives we have to climb. You're going to come in the fall and you're going to say, gosh, that thing's just so immense. It's huge. Then you're going to go through the fall and you see the leaves change, and you're going to realize mountains may not be as bad as what they think. They can have some beauty to them. Winter comes, you'll be able to see trails. You'll be able to see the trails up to the top of the mountain. You'll be able to see the little hidden gems on the mountain. And then when spring comes back, it's like a new life coming in. Now, if you go through 4 years of evaluating mountains, and then the last thing that we do is our students hike up Brasstown Ball, which is the highest mountain in Georgia, in the back of our campus. And we tell them, we're going to walk the first mountain with you. Yeah. And so that value proposition comes about when it really, they see that when they interact with their faculty, interact with their peers, they really begin to catch that value of why it's good to be in the Enchanted Valley, which is what we are.
As they say, that was absolute
fire,
because you told a story. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, hey, our college is great and we've been here for X amount of years and we change lives, unlike every other university on the face of the earth, right?
Right.
Your
right.
value proposition was in this story, and you related it to a environment and an ecosystem and to a mountain. That was really good the way you said that. I hope your whole team listens to that and says the same thing, because that would make me want to bring my kid there.
Oh, right? Sure.
And go, wow, that's, you know what? You have this big mountain in the background, and every year that goes by, you're going to be even closer to coming. So the way you told that story, and marketing is about storytelling,
right?
That's important, and that's a big takeaway. And a lot of colleges don't do that. They don't tell the story. It's just the messaging. It's saying, come here because of this, or come here because of that.
Sure.
And you know what, every other university on the face of the earth is saying the same stinking thing.
Absolutely. And for us, you know, our alumni help us in really telling the story, because if you look at who some of our alumni are, you know, Ronnie Millsap, Trisha Yearwood, you have their graduates of this institution, Charlie Blackman, who plays for the Colorado Rockies, Nick Markakis, who played for the Braves. You talk to them, and all I really have to do is put them in front of a microphone and let them tell the story. And that lets the students know, okay, I can, for myself, create and define what success and meaning are going to be for me. And I'm being encouraged to say, and that's going to change throughout your life, but you be in control of defining those things. Don't let the world define it for you. And that's where you're going to have happiness, and that's where you're going to see the benefit of our kind of education.
Amazing.
Drew, we like to ask the same two questions of our guests to end an episode. By the way, your insights are awesome. So I just want to tell you that
thank
I
you.
Really love the way you storytell. But our final two questions that we like to ask, number one, what did we not say, or what did you not say? And what didn't I ask you, more importantly, about Young Harris College that you'd like to say? So plug away with website, okay, events coming up, anything that you want to say about the college or what you guys do.
Yeah.
And then secondly, what do you see as the future of higher education?
Right. Okay. Plug in the institution, yhc.edu. The thing I would tell you about this institution is it's resilient. We have resilient alumni because the institution itself is innovative and resilient. We are willing to make changes. In the 20s, when the Depression came about, we had a farm. It became a working institution. And so that we've always molded that. What I would tell you, things that are coming up for us right now, the semester's almost over, but we have a terrific performing arts program here at the institution, and they're doing all of their performances now. We have theater, we have music, we have orchestra. That's one thing that's going on. Tomorrow is our student research day. We really put a lot of effort into having our students do research with their faculty members. That's part of the mentorship aspect. So tomorrow, we're going to have somewhere around 400 presentations that students are going to be doing on the research that they have undertaken for the semester.
Yeah.
That's a big part, because that goes back to us showing the worth and the value of what we're doing. So Young Harris, I would tell you that to go on there, go online, look and see who we are and what we stand for. The higher education future piece, for me, it goes back to, we're going to see fewer institutions. It's hard to kill a college, but boy, they're dropping pretty quickly. So for the future of higher education, what we're going to have to do is, one, change our marketing. We're going to have to market to the customer each and every semester to get them to come back. We have to show them that value and that worth, which is different in higher education than they've ever done. Two, we're going to have to be innovative in how we're using our resources. We're going to have to outsource some things that historically have not been outsourced. We're going to have to be smarter with our finances. And then I say, more importantly, institutions are going to have the resources to give scholarship support. The affordability aspect is unbelievable. And we're going to have to get away from this high tuition, high discount model, because I think it's on its way. I mean, if you charge this much, they're going to see it as quality. No. They'll see the quality when they step on your campus and they interact with your people. So get your pricing within the right area. And then finally, for all higher education institutions, we've got to do a better job with the press and with the legislatures. Higher education has gotten a bad rap, and it's because we have sit back in our ivory towers and we've not engaged media, we have not engaged the legislatures to make sure that they get the true message of who we are, and not believe that we're all multi-billion dollar endowed places trying to indoctrinate students, that we are here to change lives and have kids wrestle with the tough ideas. So the future is going to be tough for small privates. And I also think it's going to be for the regional state institutions that aren't flagships. We're going to see some of those. We've already seen it in Georgia where they've merged.
Yeah, let's break that ivory tower.
Mm-hmm.
One person that's going to break it is my guest today. By the way, I want to say before I outro him here, again, I'm going to find the right way to do it. I do want to thank Alusian Live for bringing us to Denver and for allowing us to meet with Drew, because I didn't want to cancel on him. Because that, first of all, the insights he provided are really good. So, you know, I encourage everybody to take away something. But we appreciate Alusian for letting us do this podcast with our guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the president of Young Harris College. His name is Dr. Drew Van Horn. There he is. Drew, how was your edX experience today?
Hey, it's been perfect. Thank you so much for giving me a chance to share my thoughts.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You just ed-upped.